Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, B'Shalach, From Slavery to Freedom. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, The Prince, The Book, and the Secret of Jewish Survival. Join us for the 15th Annual Executive Learning Seminar this summer, July 1st through 5th. In Jerusalem. Explore Jewish text and Jerusalem with the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more information, visit us at www.pardes.org.il or you can call us at 212-447-4333. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes and serves as the Pardes Mashgiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Parshat B'Shalach. As I have noted in previous podcasts, this week's parsha plays a pivotal role in the process of the Jewish people moving from slavery to freedom. And I would like to examine this in more detail today. Perhaps I will start with something which appears at the end of the parsha that perhaps puts in perspective the whole parsha. In the beginning of chapter 17, the Jewish people, chapter 17, verse 1, encamp in a place called Rephidim. And the Torah tells us there is no water to give the people to drink. And then the people start engaging in a dispute with Moshe. And they demand of him, "Give us water that we should drink." And Moshe says, "Why are you disputing with me? Why are you testing God?" And in the continuation of the story, God tells Moshe to take his staff, and with that staff, to strike the rock. And once Moshe strikes the rock, water will come out. And in fact, this is what happens. And in the last verse of this section, 17:7. It says, he called the name of the place Masa Emeriva, regarding the dispute of the Jewish people and regarding their testing God, saying, "Is God in our midst or not?" This last phrase, "Is God in our midst or not?" is the essence of the whole parsha. And in fact, this is perhaps the experience which God wants the Jewish people to go through. Experience after experience to realize how much God is in their midst. If we go back to the beginning of the parsha, when the Jews leave Egypt, this is chapter 13, verse 21. It says, "V'Adonai holech lefnehem yomam," and God traveled before them during the day, "ba'amud anan," in a pillar of cloud, "lanchotam haderech," to lead them on the path, "v'layla," and at night, "ba'amud esh," in a pillar of fire, "lahair lahem," to light up for them, "lalechet yomam v'layla," to facilitate their walking during the day at night. And it says, "Lo yamish amud ha'anan yomam," the pillar of cloud would not depart during the day, "v'amud ha'esh laila," and the pillar of fire at night, "lifnei ha'am," before the people. When the people leave Egypt, God gives them two symbols of his presence in their midst, the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire, two complementary symbols. The cloud accompanies them during the day to show them the way to travel. And the pillar of fire at night is there to light up the night. And the Torah emphasizes there is never a moment when one of these symbols is not in their midst. Yet nevertheless, in a number of the stories that appear in this parsha, the Jewish people seem to be oblivious to that presence of God. And let's just look at these one by one. the first story that we encounter. The Jewish people wander in the desert. God purposefully has them going in a roundabout way in order to lure Pharaoh to chase after them, so that Pharaoh mistakenly believe that they are trapped in the desert, and perhaps there is still hope of retrieving them and bringing them back to Egypt to be his slaves. And there comes a certain moment when the Jewish people see the Egyptians chasing behind them. They are terrified, and basically what they see before them is the sea, and it seems that they have come to a dead end. And the response of the people in chapter 14, verse 11, they say to Moshe, "Are there no graves in Egypt that you have taken us to die in the desert? What is this that you have done to us to take us out of Egypt? Didn't we tell you while we were still in Egypt? Leave us that we should serve Egypt. Better that we should serve Egypt than die in the desert." This verse is very, very striking. Clearly, it shows that the Jewish people still have a slave mentality, that the Jewish people do not realize the true value of freedom. One might say that perhaps it is better to die as a free person than to live as a slave. But the attitude of the Jews is better to live as a slave than to die free. But the obvious question is, why do you necessarily assume that you'll be dying? Yes, the Jewish people see Egypt chasing behind them, but they also have the cloud. They also have the fire, which reflect the presence of God. This is the first test of the Jewish people. Interestingly, Moshe's response is to tell them, "Stand firm, because you will now see the salvation of God before your eyes, and you will no longer see Egypt from this day on. God will fight for you. Just be quiet." And as I've noted in a previous podcast, God actually corrects Moshe in verse 14:15. God said, "It is not enough for the Jewish people to just stand firm, be quiet, and watch the spectacular salvation unfold before their eyes. They need to move forward. They need to go into the sea. They need to bring about their own salvation." In different language, the Jewish people need to demonstrate they have a vision. That vision is to move forward, to go towards the land of Israel, to not look back and desire to go back to the servitude of Egypt. They need to not only look forward, but be prepared to go into the water up to their neck, to endanger their lives for their vision, to do the most which they can possibly do, and only then turn to God and say, "God, I have done all that I can do. Now it's your turn to bring about the rest." And as we know, when the Jewish people go into the water, in fact, the waters split. But even when the waters split, it is not as if all of a sudden the waters have evaporated. As we see in the verses, and the rabbis highlight this, the waters part in the middle, but then instead of moving laterally, they move upwards, vertically. And as the Jews are traveling to their right, to their left, there are walls of water, which means that during the whole journey through the sea, the Jews are being tested at every moment. Perhaps the walls of water will collapse. They need to show that they have that vision, that they are prepared to go. And as we know, in the end, they are delivered. Not only are they delivered, but we are told at the very end of this section, in chapter 14, verse 31, And the people saw the great hand of God that he had done to the Egyptians. And the people are in awe of God. And the very end, Vayaminu Bashem, they believe in God and in Moshe his servant. I will not go into all the midrashim that describe all the miracles that happened at the Red Sea. And for those of you who are familiar from the Haggadah, there's a whole discussion of how many miracles actually happened at the Red Sea. But one thing is clear to everybody. What happened at the Red Sea was above and beyond anything that happened during the 10 plagues in Egypt. If the plagues in Egypt are described as being the finger of God, at the Red Sea, the Jewish people see the hand of God. At this point in time, one could say that if the Jews had any doubts as to whether God is in their midst, those doubts have been dispelled. The Jewish people now have absolute faith in God and in Moshe his servant. But we know from the continuation of the parsha that this faith is only momentary. Yes, the Jewish people have faith in God and in Moshe his servant. They see the unbelievable miracles. But the splitting of the sea was an extraordinary event. What happens the day later? And perhaps the rest of the parsha is dealing with the question, how does one experience the presence of God in their day-to-day mundane life? Not only to see God in the extraordinary, in the miraculous, but to be able to experience that presence of God in the smallest details of everyday life. Immediately after the splitting of the sea, we are told how the Jewish people travel for 3 days in the desert. They don't find water, which is a very interesting expression. It could have very easily have said there was no water, but it says they didn't find it. Perhaps that already indicates to us the problematic of the Jewish people not necessarily looking for something so that they can find it. When they finally encounter water, the water which they find is bitter. And then the reaction of the Jewish people is to complain. What will we drink? And we are told in chapter 15, verse 25, and Moses cried out to God, and God instructs him with a tree, with a piece of wood. And he throws it into the water, and the water becomes sweetened. And there God gave him law and justice, and there he tested him. And the rabbis understood that in this place, the Jewish people began the process of receiving some of the laws. And also what would seem from the verse is, Sham Nisahu, there God is testing him. Him, perhaps the Jewish people. This is a test. In other podcasts, I've spoken about how the word Lenasot also has the idea of causing to experience. It's not only a test, but a test which is an experience. God wants the Jewish people to experience that ultimately the water which they need so essentially is provided to them by God. Think about this. In the beginning of the parsha, the Jews experience the salvation of God who parts the waters. The water is something which is ominous, which is threatening. They will drown in the water. Now we have the inversion of that. They go into a desert. There is no water. The lack of water is ominous. They will die as a result of the lack. The same God who can cause the waters to split is the same God who also brings them the water. Two stories where the water is a threat, but ultimately becomes a blessing to the Jewish people. The Jewish people need to realize that it is God who gives them the water as a blessing, But that same God also expects them to have to not just ask of God to give, but to ask of themselves, what are they prepared to do? On the one hand, they need to go into the water to demonstrate their preparedness to go all out for God. And on the other hand, they need to internalize chok u'mishpat, law and justice. They need to internalize the need to have a structure that sets the tone of their day-to-day life. There are moments when people need to do extraordinary things, but they also need to have structure, to have meaning, which infuses every moment of their life. As we go on, in the next story, in chapter 16, all of a sudden we have a new issue. The new issue is, chapter 16, verse 3, the Jewish people come to Moses and Aaron and say, we wish that we had died in the land of Egypt, when we were sitting on the flesh pots, when we ate bread to our satiety. You have brought us to a desert to kill this whole congregation in starvation. Their food has run out. And then what God says to Moses in the following verse, verse 4, I am now causing them to rain from the heavens bread. And as we know in the continuation of the story, the bread is what we call the manna. But God says, I am bringing them this bread, and they will go out every day to collect it. In order to test them, will they walk in my Torah or not? To use the common expression that we have today, there is no such thing as a free lunch. God gives the Jewish people water, bread, but God also expects them to have chok u'mishpat, law and justice. God expects them to walk in his Torah. God had said to them earlier, after the verse of chok u'mishpat, this is the last verse of chapter 14, next to last, chapter 14, verse 26, God says, and if you will surely hear the voice of the Lord your God, do that which is right in his eyes. Listen to his commandments, guard his statutes. All of the illnesses which I placed on the Egyptians, I will not place on you, because I am the Lord, your healer. What we are finding here is the introduction to what will eventually happen in next week's parsha, the covenantal relationship between the Jews and God at Sinai. But little by little, the Jewish people need to learn that freedom means taking on responsibility. Freedom means accountability. And perhaps at the core of all this, the Jewish people need to be able to believe that God is with them. The Jewish people need to see that presence of God in the cloud and in the fire. And in fact, after God tells Moses to tell the people that he is going to bring them bread, we are told in chapter 16, verse 10, as Aaron speaks to the congregation of Israel, they turn to the desert. Behold, the glory of God appears in the cloud. To be honest, I am not sure exactly how to understand this verse. And what do I mean by that? In the beginning of the parsha, we were told that the cloud accompanied them every moment during the day. The cloud is there. So what's changed now? What does it mean to say the glory of God has appeared in the cloud? Is it that all of a sudden there is something extraordinary which is now happening with that cloud, which is highlighting the fact that the presence of God is there? Or is it that all of a sudden the people are noticing the cloud which they had ignored earlier? Throughout this parsha, the Jewish people need to come to an acceptance, an understanding that God is constantly with them, that God is the one who provides the basic necessities of their existence, water and bread. Every day the Jews need to go and gather that bread. so that they realize every day how their very existence is dependent upon God. I want to now shift to verses that we have seen in previous podcasts in Deuteronomy chapter 8. The context is Moses speaking to the Jewish people who are now on the threshold of entering the land of Israel. And Moses says to them in chapter 8, verse 2 in Deuteronomy, "Remember the path that you traveled 40 years in the desert, that God caused you to walk, in order to inflict you, in order to test you, that you should know, that he should know, that which is in your heart. Will you guard his commandments or not? God afflicted you. God caused you to be hungry. He gave you the manna which you didn't know and your forefathers did not know, in order to inform you that not on bread alone does man live, but on all that comes out by the mouth of God does man live." And if we look in verse 5, "And you should know with all your heart, as a man," and I will translate the word yiyaser, "disciplines his son, so too does God discipline you." The word liyaser I am translating as discipline. It can also mean to inflict suffering. And the two are not contradictory. Discipline can very often be painful because it demands something of the person being disciplined. It's painful, but ultimately it is educational. Ultimately, it is beneficial. What we have in these verses is God is saying to the Jewish people, looking back at our parsha, God gave you the manna, which was afflicting you, painful, which was testing you. The pain is the realization that the people have of how vulnerable they are, of how dependent they are, of how much they need God. But the flip side of the coin is the realization that God is there. God is there at every moment. God is providing for them. But there is the expectation of reciprocity. And I would now like to end with what chapter 8 continues and discusses. Moses then says to the Jewish people, "Behold, you are coming to the land of Israel, a beautiful land, a land which has water and springs, a land which has seven species of fruits, a land where you will not eat bread in straits, where you will not be lacking anything." And Moses says to them, "You will eat and you will be satisfied. You will bless God." And at the very moment that he says that in verse 11, he says, "Beware, lest you forget God, lest you eat and be satisfied, build houses and have everything. And then at a certain point, forget the God who gave it to you." And say in verse 17, say in your heart, "It is my strength and the power of my hand that has made for me all of this wealth. Remember the Lord your God. He is the one who has given you strength to do things in order to establish his covenant." The experience of the Jews in our parsha was not just meant to bring them from slavery to freedom, to go through a process of acknowledging that everything in their existence is a gift of God, a gift of God which also makes demands on the people, demands to set up a lifestyle which serves God. The experience of the Jews in our parsha has implications forever. It is meant to be embedded in the psyche of the Jewish people, specifically when we are in the land of Israel, to look back at that experience of the desert and acknowledge in the land of Israel, as we succeed, that everything that we have is a gift of God, and never lose sight of that. Next week, we celebrate Tu Bishvat. Tu Bishvat is the new year of the trees, as articulated in the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. Why Tu Bishvat? Because Tu Bishvat, according to the Talmud, is when most of the rains have already come. And because the rains have come, the new fruits are able to blossom. So that when we have fruits which are ripe for harvesting in the summer, those are the fruits which were produced by the rains that came until Tu B'Shvat. There are many people in Hasidic literature who argue that the celebration of Tu B'Shvat is really the celebration of the land of Israel. The recognition of the bounty of the land of Israel, which is beginning to unfold. Perhaps it is also worth noting that in Deuteronomy, in chapter 11, we are told, okay, this is chapter 11, verse 10, 11, 12, that the land of Israel is not like the land of Egypt. The land of Egypt has the Nile. The land of Israel is dependent upon rain. Tu B'Shvat marks the time when most of the winter rains should have already come. Most of the winter rains in the land of Israel. Most of the winter rains that are a gift of God. And hence, when we celebrate Tu B'Shvat, perhaps it is a time to acknowledge our relationship with God, to acknowledge the gift of God, to look forward to those fruits which are beginning to bud, which eventually will become bountiful, and already now to be thankful for that bounty which God has given us. Perhaps Tu B'Shvat is also a time for us, especially today, to reflect on the importance of the land of Israel for the Jewish people, on the gift of the land of Israel to the Jewish people. It is very easy to complain, to be critical of the faults of the Israeli government, of the Israeli people. Just as the Jewish people in the desert found it very easy to complain and to contest, it is much more difficult to be appreciative of what is and to try to further what is. To not only be critical of the reality, but to have the vision of the destiny. To not only be critical, but to be able to take responsibility and be accountable to actualize that destiny. May we learn from the experience of the Jewish people in the desert to not just complain, but to be able to see all the miracles surrounding us. To be able to then not always ask of others, but ask of ourselves, what can we do to be able to move forward and become the people of God? Shabbat Shalom. Happy Tu B'Shvat.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.